Welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie.
Greetings and welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie. My name is Jason.
I'm Chris.
I'm also Chris.
No Steve or Rich this week, but for our Halloween special, we take a trip to the Scottish countryside and find out what happens when a squad of soldiers come face to face with a pack of werewolves. Sean Pertwee stars in Neil Marshall's cult horror film, Dog Soldiers.
Now, as of this moment, as far as we're concerned, we are 50k behind enemy lines. Now, expect nothing less than gratuitous violence from the lot of you.
Every year, more and more people come through here. Every once in a while, they don't come back.
Captain?
You've got to get me out of here.
Looks like they got hit hard and fast. Every magazine is full.
From here on in, the exercise is over.
Exactly what is it we're fighting against?
Lycanthropes.
That's werewolves to you and me.
You came here because of them, right?
This was supposed to be a routine training exercise, and that's all.
The trick to survival lies not in running and hiding.
Salvage whatever weapons you can find and stand to.
Shut down the generator.
Why would they do that?
Because they can see in the dark.
And you're afraid of it.
Supposed to be one! Tore them to pieces! This in front of my eyes!
Honestly, what are our chances?
So, if little Red Riding Hood should show up with a bazooka and a bad attitude, I expect you to chin the bitch.
You're bloody loving this, aren't you?
Terry, where you at? Stick the kettle on. Could all do with a brew.
And as you just heard there, we've got a special guest with us. It's exciting, isn't it, Chris? I mean, my Chris.
Yeah.
Because
what do you mean special?
Yeah. Well, you take it how you want to take it, mate. That's fine. But we are honoured to be joined by Deadbeat Punk from the What the Fuck Do You Know podcast. So, dude, welcome. Welcome to the Wolfie Pod.
What the fuck do you want?
Well, that is a big question, and I don't think I've got enough time to go through the whole list, unfortunately. But I can come on your podcast, and I'm sure I can get something off my chest.
Oh, yeah. Studio's always open. But thank you for having me on.
No, it's welcome. I've been trying to find an excuse to get you onto the podcast somehow or another. So with no Rich or Steve this week, it was a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, and they hate the Irish, so it's the perfect time to come on.
Yeah, there you go. But anyone that's listening, I mean, I know you said from the podcast, but if anyone's listening who doesn't know what your podcast is about or what you do, then just give them a little rundown before we get into the film.
Yeah, I normally don't run over half an hour, so if this runs longer than that, we're going to have issues tonight.
Oh, it's definitely going to go over half an hour.
I get people in, one subject, whatever they want, go in by the name, and just pour about it for half an hour, try to get other people interested in it or talk about potential sequels or reboots or things like that. Yeah, I like to keep it snappy.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I feel that's pretty cool, really. You know,
yeah.
Not everybody's got an hour and a half of their time to listen to some people rambling, so.
I think I found myself a lot of the podcasts in my regular rotation were breaking 3 hours. I was just, I do not have time for this.
Exactly, so. And you keep it pretty bang on the half an hour as well, I notice, when I listen.
Every 10 episodes, I like to run longer. Mm-hmm. Normally, if it's a bigger subject that you really can't pack into half an hour, I try to save for the 10th. But
sure. I never really noticed that, to be honest, but I just seem to notice that. You know what? He's got it bang on 30 minutes once again this week. That's impressive.
Butchered in the edit. Sometimes yeah. There's not even a breath in the 30 minutes. Every second counts.
That's what Jason has to do. It takes him 3 hours to edit me into half an hour of dialogue.
Yeah.
It's a skill.
Chris, Sometimes you are a challenge, but I take that challenge wholeheartedly. No problem. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, no, guys, go and check out his... I'm going to call you Punk. I mean, that's what you're well-known...
It's what most people call me, yeah.
Yeah, just to save confusion, you know, because we've got Chris here as well. So, yeah. Now, please go and check out Punk's podcast. It is really, it's a really good listen, especially if you're into video games, apparently. So
very heavy on the video games.
Yeah.
Just know a lot of nerds.
But sometimes you have something different, don't you? So
I try. I want to be multimedia, but it's always video games.
Yep. So really pesky video games keep coming back. but anyway, on to the film itself and a quick rundown of the plot. I quite like it. It's a bit nice, bit of a different... from the norm.
28 days later, it doesn't need a lot of blood. It's just a great story.
It just kind of happens, doesn't it? It's just kind of like, there you go. Roll with it, and then here we go.
It's just a squad of soldiers out on a training mission in the heart of the Scottish Highlands, and they come up against their fiercest enemies ever when they find themselves trapped and hunted by a pack of werewolves. All they have to do to survive is last the night. But it's not that easy, with other challenges thrown at them throughout the evening. But the question asks itself whether anyone will survive. And, you know, spoilers. They do. One of them. So.
And the dog.
And the dog. Sorry, my mistake.
That's the one bit that had you on the edge of your seat. If the dog doesn't make this, I'm turning it off.
But as I said, like, I quite like it's not just like some werewolf roaming a town, kind of just trying to hunt out its next prey or whatever, you know, we're in the Scottish Highlands, you know, where they get trapped in a farmhouse out in the sticks. I just like the whole soldier mix with that, really. I don't know what you guys think.
I liked it to begin off with the level of swearing between the squaddies instantly charmed me. But I loved how it began with they're out there on a test mission, you know, the blanks in their guns, they're just whistling as they go along. They're not taking it seriously in any shape or form. And the contrast between that beginning and how it ends up or how the story goes, I think it's fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. Didn't notice it the first time because I was very drunk. I don't know if you guys have this where when you were a teenager you had house parties and ropey movies always got stuck on in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's my introduction to a lot of questionable horror and bad movies is you're drinking and you're smoking things you shouldn't have been, and then you have these vague, patchy memories of stuff, and you're just like, oh, and then you watch a film 20 years later, and you're just like, oh, okay.
Imagine, I remember chunks of this very well. The tree, instantly, I remembered.
Mm-hmm. When I was watching it, I remembered bits, fragments. Like I said before we started recording, I'm pretty sure I've seen bits of it late night somewhere, but it was an enjoyable watch. We're going in completely blind, essentially. I didn't know what to expect. I checked the wiki and the IMDb. I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. So I was watching it, and I was actually struck with how quickly it moves and how English it is. It is a pure English production, and it's great. It's rough and ready, and it's fast, and it said colossal amount of swearing. But I'm half Irish, and we've got 100% purebred Irish on our recording tonight. So I've grown up around lots of swearing Irish people, and
that's good. No spoilers needed.
No, and it was just it was one of those films that it just didn't stop apart from until we get to the house where you have that little bit of calmness before the storm. And it was really enjoyable film that I hadn't seen. It's nice to uncover a gem of a movie that I have never really actually seen until yesterday. So, and it was fun.
Yeah, because, you know, Dog Soldiers, it's looked upon very highly, you know. I think throughout the years, the cult following of the film has only risen because of how they made the film and the story in itself. And I love it for its Britishness as well. It warms my heart that something could have such a following and be British for a change. It's really nice. But I have to agree with what you just said there, Chris, with Dog Soldiers. Like, it is just a refreshing watch on the genre, and it is fast, isn't it? There's no real slowdown, and I really like that. You know, the squad of soldiers are welcoming and likable, and, you know, there's one in particular, which I'm sure probably all our favourites that's not Sean Pertwee. You know, and it's just fun. And you've got to take it in the right light, I think. I think some people watch this film and they take it too seriously, where this film is not supposed to be taken seriously in a lot of ways, because I guess some of it isn't as polished as probably what, you know, you may expect or whatever. Some people could go into watching this film and it's, they could take the, you know, when they change the film green from like normal to the rougher look and all that. I can imagine a lot of people tell that, why would they do that? You know, or I don't like that. And they probably even look at the werewolves themselves and go, Jesus, they look shit. This film is shit. Do you know what I mean? But
with them using puppetry and live action effects, like, even if it's shit, but nothing ever looks as shit as old CGI.
No, correct. That's the thing. And I've championed that every recording we talk about miniatures and practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
They hold up so much more because they're real. They exist. They're there. They're interacting with the actors and the stuntmen.
And if you see those outside of that movie, you know where they're from. Such a unique style.
Yeah, it was like Jason said a minute ago, weird parallels with the way it didn't take itself that seriously. It was kind of like an American Werewolf in London, that kind of vibe, where you're just along for the ride. An hour and, 40 minutes? Hour and a half?
Yeah, about an hour and 40.
It crams so much into that short runtime that when you do get to the payoff, and it is what it is. It's a low budget movie done so masterfully.
And it runs throughout the entire movie. Whenever they get caught out, normally by a werewolf, there's always a smart answer, or they take the piss or something. Even before they get their head ripped off, they're not going down without a quip.
It's like when, Sean Pertwee's sergeant character's like completely and utterly maimed and he's still pointing those guns, lifting shit, just like mowing things down. It's like, oh my God, it's just relentless.
And I think, I guess a lot of people would take the models of the werewolves themselves and think that they're rubbish. But me personally, like, even just the design of them, I really love. Like those, the really long legs, you know, and like how they stand so for boarding over their preys and victims. I've just never really seen a werewolf being depicted like that before or since, really. And I think that's one of the things that really stand out for me in Dog Soldiers is the werewolf design and the fact that, they obviously, it being a low budget, they did go practical and didn't try any CGI, which is a perfect move. And I think just those two things together really, I don't know, just really gave it a bit of atmosphere on that front.
They almost look like gangly teenagers for werewolves.
Yeah, exactly.
But that doesn't detract from their speed, their strength, their guile. They're still very capable predators.
And also, it's learnt from the classic horror masters and, say, Spielberg, is don't show the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Show bits of it. Drip feed it to everyone. And then you've got that. Like, it's all in your brain, like, what's going on, what do they look like, what, how are they doing this stuff? And it pays off. Like, I think I was watching the very end of it when my family arrived, and my nephew, he's 10 and a half, he said, is Uncle Chris watching Doctor Who? And I was just like, oh my God, no, I'm not. Like, from the mouth of a child, I was just like, well, it didn't even occur to me watching it. But I suppose to a 10-year-old, that, you know, 20-year-old movie would look like that. But
plus, you got to think at that age, they've probably not seen a lot of practical effects.
No, because he's into all the modern Transformers and Avengers movies. And so, yeah, he's grown up with nothing but ropey CG in mass-produced, you know, designed by committee movies.
But while we're on the kind of thing with the effects of the film, I guess, there was a lot of gore throughout the film, which I appreciated. Always like a bit of gore. But I think the biggest, like the scene, like with the most gore that I really liked, which I'm sure you probably all know what I'm alluding to, is, you know, the scene where Sarge gets his intestines ripped out of him. And like, you've got the other soldiers just kind of ramming them in back into him. And like just folding up his skin so they can get him somewhere safe to super glue him.
That was brutal, man. That.
But like, you know, and there were some other examples of the gore throughout the film, but looking at it now, when I watched it the other day, like I could see that that scene had Sean Pertwee with an obvious piece of makeup kind of stuck to his belly.
That was his real intestines. He's a method actor, Jason. I mean, come on. We didn't expect anything less from Sean Pertwee.
I think when I watched it back in the day, I didn't see any of that kind of stuff. Adult eyes, you know, it sucks.
Not only that, with the curse of the high definition television.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Because if you ever get Blu-ray, like reprintings of movies, you can see set pieces that you never saw in original screenings. It does take a bit of the magic away.
Like C-stands and strings. But I must admit, though, I did have to laugh when the dog started pulling at his intestines.
Was that the bandages or his intestines? Because I couldn't work out if it was one or the other.
They were stretchy, and he said, I can't really say, get off my entrails, or I'm sure that. And I was watching it like, is the dog really pulling at his intestines? Like, oh my fucking God.
Yeah, that was another good.
Just kind of balled them up and put them back in. It's like, oh,
I just love to, every time something happened to Pertwee, somebody come up and, well, Sarge, how are you feeling? I said, I'm fucking magic. What do you think?
Is there, like, you know, when we're talking about the gore in itself, was there any other part of the film that stood out for you in the gore wise section?
When they had the Land Rover, when it came back from the shed. And there the werewolf in the back seat.
Yeah.
And just open up the door and it's just Jam comes out with a dog tag.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, that's you gone.
Yeah. It was a very Jurassic Park, wasn't it? But I suppose a werewolf could get into the car better than a Dilophosaurus could. But
just that puff of warm air behind him.
I mean, he just knew he wasn't getting out. It's just like...
Bit messy, that one. But like, I guess I just want to kind of rewind back to the beginning of the film a little bit, because you know, right at the beginning of the film, we get introduced. I can't remember some of the names. You know, come on, listeners, you know what I'm like with names. But
yeah, we have the couple that are camping.
Mm.
Well, yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that scene.
Who far forward?
Maybe. Yeah, I was thinking about the scene where. We get first introduced to Ryan, who is the bad soldier dude, and then the other one who just passed the test that he was doing, and then he gets instructed to shoot the dog, and he says no, I don't want to shoot the dog, and then the higher up soldier, whatever, shoots the dog. Yeah, I just thought that was quite a strong scene to you know, right at the beginning of the film, really.
It was Guy Ritchie's Snatch. When he wanted to make Bricktop be the ultimate bad guy, I think somebody advised him to say, have a scene where he hits a dog.
Right.
And then you've got an instant bad guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think that does ring true.
Yeah, it does, I guess, because I thought, you bastard, you know, and instantly hated him. So in that sense, I guess it worked.
Yeah, weirdly, in that scene, I had flashbacks to Matthew Vaughn's Kingsman, where Eggsy has to shoot a dog.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. I sat there, I was just like, I wonder if that was inspired by this film, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know if that is an actual military, what's the term given to initiation kind of things. I don't know if that's an actual military practice.
Well, you'd imagine military dogs are all trained. It'd be like shooting a soldier. You wouldn't fucking do it.
No, you wouldn't. And that's why I was just like, where did that kind of thing originate from? Like shooting a dog to show your loyalty or your caliber?
I wouldn't go to war with anybody that shot a dog. No.
I was not on board with that dude straight away. So, yeah, that did work.
And Captain Ryan or Liam Cunningham doing his best to hide his accent. Bless him.
Yeah, you did mention that scene with the tent. And I did quite like that as well, because it kind of led through the film to the end.
Mm-hmm.
With the silver sword, silver dagger thing. I did just like that scene in general, I guess, like with the zip coming up on its own.
We're doing that brilliantly.
Yeah, I know, right?
How long's the zip?
But yeah, no, I thought that was a really cool scene as well. But when we'll get into our favourite scene in, a bit later on. So we should move on. Let's take a musical break, and then after this, nice piece of music from the soundtrack of Dog Soldiers. We'll have a discussion about the cast. Looking at the cast of Dog Soldiers, I mean, obviously Sean Pertwee sticks out like a sore thumb.
Mm-hmm.
To me, anyway. Some of the other actors didn't really stick out for me through this film, but I'm guessing that I've probably seen them in other things throughout my life at some point or another.
I'm going to sound incredibly xenophobic here, but I kind of found it hard to distinguish between the soldiers.
Yes.
And I hate to say it, because they all sounded English to my ears, I couldn't really separate. I could separate some of them, but not all of them.
Once the soldier was talking, I was just like, who's that nickname or call sign? I was just like, it's just mashing together. They might have just been like, you know, unnamed soldiers to me. I don't know, maybe I was paying attention, but that's the wrong word to use there. But Sean Pertwee obviously is, you know, kind of UK acting royalty now, isn't he? But back then, I think he was just known and really as John Pertwee's son, wasn't he? You know, now he's kind of like got Gotham. Is it Gotham he was in? What was it? Where he played Alfred? Was that in the TV show Gotham, or was that in?
Must be, because I can't remember seeing him play Alfred anywhere else.
I'm just checking the IMDb Gotham.
Yeah, I've never watched the show. I just knew that was kind of one of his biggest casting things. But my niece arrived earlier today when I was watching it. And she mentioned, is it Kevin McKidd from, I don't know what he's been in, Grey's Anatomy or something? And she's like 18, so I wasn't familiar with any of the cast other than Sean Pertwee. Maybe they're just off my radar, maybe they're not in the things that I have watched, or they're just not that familiar.
Well, let's concentrate on Sean Pertwee for a moment, though, and like his character of Sarge. Like he was, I think like Sean... I don't know, like he did a great job of portraying Sarge.
That was a really explosive performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He really threw himself in there, and he...
Yeah, he was believable. You know, I felt like he was a Sarge. I felt like he was in charge of his squad, and he was a likable member of that squad, and I felt like the other members would probably do anything that he asked them to do because they had his trust.
Oh, yeah, I think it was a mutual thing, too. He was very protective of them as well, in between mocking them every chance he got.
That's just lads, though, isn't it? You know?
Very much that, yeah.
Lads will always do that. But he was very commanding presence as well, like very strong presence in the film all the way through it. If you didn't see him, you could hear him. You know, it's that kind of thing is always there.
Even the scene where they're fixing him up with a super glue.
Oh, it's
he's the strongest person in the room.
Yeah, and then passing him whiskey and painkillers and whatever, and he's just like, just knock me out. Punches him once, he's like, what the fuck? Knock me out, hit me properly. He's like, Jesus Christ. But yeah, he was great. I loved him. Loved him to bits in this.
I don't know if you had that moment in this film like I did, in between kind of learning why, I guess. But I mean, we had all this, you know, he'd been attacked by a werewolf, his guts had spilled out everywhere and they super glued him back together. And like he'd been in bed and like immobilized for quite some time. And then I think the scene where the werewolf comes into the bedroom, I think it's after that he starts to get more active and like he starts to become more involved in the action and everything. And I was like, well, hang on a minute ago. He was bedridden and like I say, all his guts were hanging out. And now he's like grabbed a gun and he's running around and everything like that.
That's exactly where the penny dropped to me. I was like, hang on a minute.
It's even the character himself having that realization and explaining it.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, he really does not want to turn.
No, but he left it until, was it the moment in the kitchen, didn't he? Like to tell the audience and thing, and that explains like why he was still alive and why he wasn't dead, because he wasn't killed with a silver dagger or a silver bullet. And I was just like, hang on a minute. Yeah, then my knowledge of werewolves just kicked in.
Are we disappointed, I get, that we didn't get a full-on transformation scene, or did you quite like the fact that they kind of...
He went out as the man that he wanted to go out as, didn't he? So,
oh, yeah. It's almost as if he had that planned.
Yeah. I think it would cheapen the death to have him transform and then be killed as one of the werewolves.
I think I must be thinking about the other one. Is it Ryan? The Ryan, the bad dude, bad soldier dude that that turned at the end, wasn't it?
He just kind of fucked off and fucked back in again.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, no, Sean Pertwee was just stellar, really. Like, it's just a good, solid performance. What did you think of Cooper, who was played by, Kevin McKidd? He was, I guess, like you saying, like, a lot of the soldiers were hard to distinguish against each other, but I guess Cooper was one that stood
Cooper
out.
Cooper had a bit more screen time. He kind of separated himself from the rest.
Mm. Yeah, and then that deep Scottish accent probably helps to get him out a little bit as well.
Because I was thinking, this is soon after Train Spotting.
Yeah, it would be, couple of years removed?
A few years later, wasn't it? Yeah.
So I think, what was he, Tommy in that?
Oh,
or
gosh.
Or have I made this up?
No, he was Tommy in Trainspotting. You're right, yes.
All Scottish people are the same.
God, I haven't seen Trainspotting in so long.
I actually had to go back when I watched the sequel. All it made me want to do is watch the original. It was just waste of time, that was.
Yeah, no, yeah. I kind of had the feeling with that. I never really bothered. I just thought it could never eclipse the original.
Especially when they reference it so much, like elbow you in the ribs every 5 minutes. Do you remember that? Wasn't that great? Mm. it was.
Yeah. It's a baseball, sounds like a baseball bat with reference written across it. They'll be there hitting you around the face with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've got it.
It's like Matrix Resurrection, or whatever it's called. That like every 5 minutes. Oh, remember this bit in the Matrix? Remember that bit in the Matrix? Cool, look at this cool bit from the Matrix. I'm like, just show me some new stuff. That's for another conversation.
That's when you know that we're old, when we're getting very belated sequels to beloved franchises, and you say, "Oh, here we go again, checking the boxes off."
I think he did another good job of portraying Cooper, and I quite like Cooper in the character. I thought he was pretty cool.
He and Pertwee seem very close. You know, he seems to have a lot of faith, but again, mutual. Because when he gets hurt, you know, he gives him the squad. So you need to look after the boys if I'm not able to.
Yes, yeah, that trusting kinship.
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin's been quite busy in his life. I think he's one of the, apart from Sean, I know we mentioned Grey's Anatomy and Trainspotting, but, you know, he's been Star Wars Rebels and Brave. He was a voice in Brave as well.
A few game credits. I think he's one of the Call of Duty regulars as well.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And, Vice City, one of the GTAs anyway. I don't think it was San Andreas. Yes, I don't know why people keep thinking I'm a video game podcaster with bits of knowledge like that. No.
Yeah. I've not seen any movie he's been in. However, I've just seen that he was in Father Ted.
Oh, was he?
What the hell, yeah. Father Deegan in Father Ted. What the hell?
I'm really going to have to hand in my Irish card after failing Father Ted.
Father Ted trivia.
Cut that bit out. Oh, it's the... the episode where they get lost in the biggest lingerie section in Ireland.
I've just seen a screenshot from it. Is it Seven Priests in the lingerie section of a department store?
A scandal waiting to happen.
Oh, I had no idea.
So yeah, the lad's been around a bit, I guess. So I feel like I really should know his name a bit more than I actually do. So I apologise.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening. He's in tears now.
Yeah.
We're going to get sweat for you people.
We're going to get a lawsuit from his agent soon to tell us off. Do you think it was, I suppose it was written from the beginning that Cooper was going to be the one that survived to the end with his dog, I guess.
Yeah, and sadly there was that thing, especially with the snippet where he wouldn't shoot the dog. Mm. So he was qualified enough to be in the special team, but it was his morality that held him back.
Mm-hmm.
And that does seem to keep up throughout the movie, where he seems to be smarter and a bit more courageous than the rest of the group.
And a lot more loyal. He's not as much of a loose cannon either.
Yeah.
He's really loyal, just like the dog was to him. So it's got that nice narrative throughout the entire film. And
because even when it seems like a write-off, when it's like there's no hope to save somebody, he keeps trying. like up to the very last seconds, and you need that in horror movies.
Yeah, and he was like, "No, we'll get you through this. We'll get you through this. You won't change." And like, but he did what the Sarge said. He said, "Get in the basement, and you'll survive the massive gas explosion."
It's a lead floor. What do you want?
Yes, wooden floor. That explosion would have sucked him and the dog straight out of that base. But it's a film. It's fun.
That was a bit unbelievable. I mean, no one would survive that, even in a basement, surely.
They're fucking werewolves. What do you want?
We're watching a film about werewolves, and now we're debating on the physics of an explosion and someone in a wooden basement. It's fine.
Oh, okay.
And fair the basement enough. Door wasn't damaged at all, but the house was obliterated. Which is a great shot, actually. I don't know if that was an actual full house they blew up or a miniature, but that looked brilliant. You actually felt it, like even the camera
somebody
was shaking.
Somebody sacrificed their shed.
Yeah.
I like to believe it was a real house. You know, maybe it wasn't. And so therefore, you know, they did a really good job of the model because it looked really, really
it
real.
Was, yeah, it was just gloriously shot.
So the other soldiers, the collective heirs, break them apart for me.
Well, I mean, we had a Spoon, didn't we? Darren Morfitt.
There is no Spoon.
I guess he was the one I like, the kind of, I mean, he had a bit of, he had a personality, didn't he? This was the one that had the fist fight with the werewolf, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I remembered his name after that point. After that point, no.
And I really, you know, I'd forgotten a lot of this film from when I first watched it back in the day. And I was like, is he really going to fist fight this werewolf? Because if he is, that's going to be fucking mental. That's going to be amazing. And he actually did. And it was great. I loved it.
Oh, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it. I was like, oh, please don't tell me that werewolf's going to get him with the sword through him. And he's just slowly pushing it into his mouth. And I was just like, oh, no, oh, no. And then, like, oh, no, someone's got to survive. It can't just be the dog.
Oh, I'd like that ending.
Yeah.
It was during the fight, too, after he punched him for a while and thought, this is going nowhere. And he just picked up everything from the kitchen to use as a weapon.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I remember sitting there, I was like, there's an axe sitting behind you on the wall. Like, was it in the basement?
Mm-hmm.
When he was having the final fight with the werewolf? I'm sure there was like an axe. Oh no, it was in the basement, wasn't it? Because there were bodies hanging up down there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just pick that axe up off the wall. But it won't do anything because it's not a silver axe. Then just so happened to be a silver dagger that they foreshadowed earlier.
And I remember seeing that a silver letter opener and said, that's a stupid fucking present.
Yeah.
Bring that back. Get me something good.
Give me a goddamn video game.
VR helmet, at least.
Yeah. It's kind of weird because I recognised the actress. I can't remember her name for life of me. Emma Cleesby. But when I looked her up, she's got literally nothing to her name other than this and a few other small projects in her late 90s.
Yeah, Emma Cleesby, sorry, just played Megan, didn't she?
And I swear I've seen her in lots of things, but maybe she's got that face that just, I don't know, just she seemed very familiar to me, but when I looked her up, she's been in nothing that I've seen.
Are you trying to say you don't watch Holby City?
No.
Doctors? Inspector Lewis? Missing?
No.
Doomsday?
Nope.
1/100th of a second? Coronation
nope.
Street.
Nope.
55 degrees north.
Nope.
I keep this going. Heartbeat.
Nope.
What?
Linda in Heartbeat. It was a classic.
Nah, fuck off. She was in Heartbeat.
For one episode.
Oh, for that. <2000s>.
Oh, no, wait. That was in what? Sorry. Heartbeat was still going in the year 2000. Is that
was it
true?
Going that long? Was
yeah, it was
it going
only
that
set
long?
In the past. It was actually recorded much later. Yeah, I'll just leave. That's fine.
I don't believe that. That's bonkers. Wow. What you learn, eh? What you learn?
Every day is a school day.
Yeah, I just thought Heartbeat finished in like 1995 or something.
18 seasons?
Heartbeat went for 18 seasons.
Yeah. Sneaky Google. I'm sure this is very interesting for the listeners, but...
we're an English podcast. Of course it would be.
Oh, yeah.
And if an American, I know one American that listens, and I'm sure he'll be all over it now.
Original release was 10th of April 1992, and it ran until the 12th of September 2010.
Wow.
Fucking hell. I'm gutted I missed all these Heartbeat episodes.
Do a spin-off catch-up podcast.
Yeah. Let's do a Heartbeat podcast.
I'm going to have to go and revisit, 120 episodes of Heartbeat, aren't I now? God, I haven't watched Heartbeat. I haven't watched that since I was... a child, I think.
Just that theme tune always meant bedtime, bastard.
Yeah, bath and bedtime, school in the morning.
Upbeat by followed by London's Burning, and you knew you was in trouble for school the next day.
372 episodes. You get a good year out of that if you upload it every day.
Coming up on the Wolfie Pod Network.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the retrospective Upbeat podcast, where we go episode by episode.
This number week, one in the green grass charts.
What's green grass scheming for now?
Was Nick Berry the right choice for the lead role? Let's discuss. Let's not.
It seems we've sidestepped a bit. I was not joking about this half hour. I want to go home.
Right, come on then, quick, we need to move on. But yeah, I think that's all that needs to be said about Emma, unfortunately. She did a great job.
She was great.
Her acting in the film itself was brilliant. Mm. And it's a shame that she didn't really get picked up for much more afterwards. It's a bit of a shame, really, but such is life, unfortunately.
She almost had that, like, Chloe Annette vibe going on as well.
Mm. Yeah, I guess so.
Quite confident and delivers everything. And she's menacingly innocent enough until the pivotal moment comes along.
It's quite believable throughout the entire movie until it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess like the big twist of the film is the fact that, you know, throughout you get to this farmhouse, isn't it? And you wonder where the family's gone. It's all deserted and everything. And, you know, you've just met this Megan who's kind of rescued you from being hunted in the forest.
That is one bit of it that sat down and went, bullshit. That's bullshit. Oh, there's no other houses for 400 miles around.
Yeah.
How big do you think Scotland is?
Yeah.
We're talking about a film with werewolves, Punk. Come on, man. You know?
Yeah, geography means nothing. That
lead floor in my face.
Indestructible wood planks.
Yeah, and that realization that she is actually part of that family, and that family is the werewolves.
Yeah, and she's basically baited them.
Yeah.
Literally picked them up and taken them. That's just mad.
And like, you kind of kick yourself. Like, you think, as in to go, I should have seen that a lot earlier. Because although it's a good twist, I mean, it's a, I don't know. Like, I just felt like I should have seen that coming, and I didn't.
No, me neither, weirdly. I didn't even register with me. I was like, we're going this way, are we? Okay.
The main bit of foreshadowing was when they were describing how a pack operates, and you've got the older male and the younger one. It's like the second in command. And they have the family photo kind of around the same time. And then, of course, their name is Celtic for horror, I think.
Which, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's... My Irish isn't as good as it should be, but it's along those lines.
Well, I like that fact, I guess. I like that they put that thought into that. Oh, that's cool. I know we were saying about the other soldiers. They weren't that memorable,
there was,
I guess.
The football one.
But we had the football dude. Was that Joe?
I don't know.
But he was, I don't know, he was quite straight-faced, wasn't he? And just kind of took it on the chin and just did being a soldier, I guess. There wasn't much to him, was there?
Which one was it? Was impaled by the tree? We kind of touched on it earlier, but I do like the first death that freaks everybody out was just caused by one of them, a highly trained soldier, running blindly into a forest and getting impaled by a branch.
I'm not sure. Did we know the name? I'm not sure.
I'm sure somebody shouted it. Ah, Bruce.
Yeah, they mentioned that someone was gone when they were in the Land Rover, but I can't remember who they were talking about. Because when I was watching it, I thought they said, because obviously you'd seen Sean Pertwee being disemboweled, and you're just like, I heard someone say, oh, so-and-so's gone. And I'm like, wait, Sean Pertwee was in this for 20 minutes? And then, oh no, he's still alive. I have no idea who they were talking about that had gone, that was dead.
I think the trouble is that, I don't know, like if someone dies quite close to the beginning of a film, you just don't really care, do you? You know, you don't really pay much attention.
That's the sacrificial lamb, isn't it? That's
And then
Drew Barrymore at the beginning, a scream kind of moment.
And like you just kind of move on with the film and you kind of just forget them. You know, you've had your minute of gore and whatever else, and you're like, I don't know, you just move on, don't you?
And
you just
remember at the house party seeing that and giggling my arse off. And doing exactly the same thing, watching it sober 20 years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fun that had me in stitches was when they get to the house and they're all just like barricading the windows and the doors and getting all the weapons sorted. And we had that lovely A-Team montage that needed to be having the A-Team theme to it. They're opening all the boxes, see what they could use and defend with. And I was like, needs the A-Team. But when they all stood around, so right, put the water on, let's make a fucking brew. Anyone want a brew? I was just like, that's the most British midpoint of a movie I've seen, where they want is a cup of tea when they get to this kind of, well, safe house, if you will.
It's even when they're delivering the cups of tea and one of them is keeping watch with a rifle out the window.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even break pose to grab a cup of tea. Is it routine?
Just needed a couple of Mr. Kipling cakes to go with it as well.
You know, if they had a couple of Kit Kats, they would have got her there alive.
Yeah, they would have done, yeah.
It's like what you hear at the end of the trailer at the beginning of the episode, you know, and they made the point of playing that scene of like, let's have a brew, let's have a cup of tea.
Because nothing comes between English people and a cup of tea. Even if it is the end of their world, they will have a cup of tea. Or someone will have a flask with tea in it.
Absolutely. Any other soldiers? I can't really remember.
I had names beside deaths, but not all of them. My research is haphazard. So Joe's the one that got made into jam in the Land Rover because he was the one that said his worst fear would be being stuck beside the guy during the penalty shootout because his head hits the Land Rover bonnet.
Oh, that was right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not really helping with this. These notes are awful.
That's right. You're fitting in perfectly with our way of podcasting.
With our shtick. We just make up as we go along.
Just do all the chin scratching on air.
Yeah.
Right. One thing that I did wonder, like, I don't know if it was ever... Who was the skeleton in the cupboard? Or was it just there for shock value?
There's like three of them, wasn't there?
Yeah, at like three skulls landed when he, you know... shot the floor and they came through.
I took it as, you know, they keep them in the basement, but one of them's a sneaky fucker, Midnight Snacks.
Oh, sneaking
them in
snacks
the wardrobe.
Upstairs.
Yeah.
But it's an intelligent werewolf hiding the rubbish in the bottom of the wardrobe.
Fainting people? There's nobody living around there for 400 miles.
Basic question, how they get the supplies, you know? They didn't have Deliveroo back then.
I'd say Amazon probably would deliver bodies. They're that kind of organization.
Yeah, it's a werewolf movie, so wouldn't it be deliver? Ooh.
Oh, dear God, Chris.
Oh, come on. Steve's not here. I need to make some really bad jokes.
Now I'm going to have to put the stupid stupid pun whistle in now.
Just fix it in post.
Oh, dear God.
So as well as that, we have Terry. I don't know which one Terry was.
No, me neither. No.
Ben Wright, be werewolf.
We apologise for all the soldiers lost to werewolves in Scotland that we do not remember your names. We do apologise.
We're all wearing paper poppies just for you.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, well, I think the last person that I'd like to talk about in the cast is Liam Cunningham, who played Ryan, the evil soldier dude who shot the dog at the beginning of the film.
What a bastard.
And, I know, what a bastard.
I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Obviously, I know him more from Game of Thrones than anything, and that was... 6 years of my life I'm never getting back. I tried so hard with that show. I really did.
We watched two episodes of Game of Thrones and decided it's not for us. So we kind of moved on with our life.
I fell off the book series. I didn't think highly of them. So I thought watching the show would probably be a waste of time too.
I think that was probably a good call.
Yeah, it was classic HBO clickbait TV. And it's just like, and I was...
Why do you hate nudity?
I was watching it, and again, Liam Cunningham's screen presence, whether he's in this or a comedy movie, is just so there. He is designed to play people you can't trust or people that you trust with your life.
No, he's in between.
That, yeah, he's got that weird caliber where he can play a real nasty piece of shit, but then also play a really empathic lovely older guy, and I thought he was great in this. And then obviously the tables turn, and you're like, holy fuck, like, he knew everything was. And it was when he said, basically, you're all expendable. You know, I was like, you cold bastard. Where it all comes to the forefront, where they're just threatening literally with his life, and he always just comes out, you're expendable. Essentially, no one would miss you.
Because the contrast from when they find him, he's like cowering in his camp.
Exactly.
Everybody's been killed, up to that point where he was saying, we were sent out to catch one of these werewolves because we want to weaponize them, and you were the bait to kind of draw them out. I said, oh, you prick.
Yeah, it's instant hate. And it's just like, but they were drip feeding throughout the entire film, weren't they? Like, is he trustworthy? What's going on? He's not quite telling us everything. And then all comes out in the kitchen. And yeah, it was just brilliant performance from Liam Cunningham.
Yeah, because he kept alluding as well through different points of the film that there was only supposed to be one, which gave it that mystique, I guess, of it not just being another werewolf movie. There's some kind of something sinister going on that we don't know about. And I was intrigued by that. And I wish they'd, not necessarily in this film, but kind of explored that a little bit more in another, you know, whether it was a prequel film or something or other. But
well, they do mention that Meg was like their tour guide for this area. She was the one. So I think they were fed the information that there was only one werewolf, so there'd be a smallish group go out. Because you'd imagine that basement is basically Ryan's entire squad.
Yeah, the meat locker.
Yeah, so they literally did get people delivered to them. They've just had two army squads delivered, and they're going to fill up the pantry.
Yeah, of course. And it's Scotland, and it'll keep chilled for most of the year.
Yeah, smoke it, it'll last for ages.
Yeah. But that's another thing in this film that I loved, was it kind of played along the lines of, they're not senseless killing machines. These things are intelligent, sentient beings that can set traps and pick people off like pack hunters. And
they keep a lovely home.
They do, yeah. And did it establish in the film that they changed back to human form once they changed? I know werewolf lore, you know, inverted commas there, says that they do change back after the full moon. So I can only imagine in this community, a werewolf people have been quite happily living for years, and they know when they're a werewolf and they know when they're a human. It just struck me as very calculated, clever behaviour. I know we're talking about a werewolf movie. I mean, come on.
I mean, yeah, they kept alluding like they've got to make it through the night, haven't they, and get to daylight to survive. So that was my interpretation of what that meant, was that they would turn back.
That, again, when you look back in retrospect after Meg revealing that she is one of the pack, she just wanted to keep them there for the night and get them picked off one by one.
Yes.
All their knowledge come from her and feeding them bullshit throughout the entire movie.
It's like, you know, herding deer for shooting at a private park, isn't it? It's like let them run amok in this woodland of Scotland. And
because even the Land Rover blowing up the shed, as fantastic as it was, that just got rid of their only means of escape.
Yeah. It was when he told us that there were no werewolves in that garage, were there? I was just like,
but that explosion was great.
Yeah, the explosion was fantastic. But yeah, we all know that explosions can't kill werewolves, and neither can normal bullets. It has to be silver.
I'm glad I blew up a shed before I died. That was on my bucket list.
All those things they could have used in that shed to survive, and they blew it all up, including the car.
Yeah.
It's a shame it wasn't a lead-lined shed.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know, I'm pretty sure the Land Rover would have survived, and the engine would have turned over, and it would have just worked perfectly well.
You could have drove the shed to safety.
Yeah, and like that bit where the matches keep snapping, and there's just like, then Sarge just comes out with a bottle of a Molotov cocktail and just throws it.
He loved that scene.
Yeah, he did, that was great.
Joy in his face.
But Punk, how did you enjoy Liam Cunningham's performance?
There was an ongoing thing at the house party where everybody kept commenting on how expertly he hid his Irish accent. And I just can't judge. I don't know what that just sounded English to me.
Yeah.
But if somebody English was doing an Irish accent, I could pick it out from a mile away.
Oh, big time. Yeah, we're rubbish at accents.
I think everybody's rubbish at accents. It's just if you don't have an ear for it, you can fool people. Chris can do a French accent for us now.
No.
Oh.
I can't do accents to save my life. I can do parody accents and, you know, a busy day at work when you just hit the wall and you just go fucking mad at work. But, yeah, accents have never been my strong point at all.
But, yeah, loved his performance. Just, he was sinister through and through from the moment he was on to the moment he was off. I know he looked a bit different in his last couple of scenes, but...
Yeah, he's just that menacing... And again,
bastard.
In retrospect, when you look back at it, you're like... Like Jason said earlier, I didn't even pick up on that until we're talking now. That now I'm thinking about it, like, actually, yeah. There were some moments there where you're like, hang on a minute, something's fishy's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess he was... His transformation, one I was talking about earlier, wasn't it? Where we kind of saw bits and pieces of him trying to transform, but it wasn't a full-on transformation scene, was it?
Yeah, because you got the hands coming up from under the table. They were transforming into claws. Mm. His eyes turned.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And I'm sure that most of that decision was based on budgetary reasons, like, you know, and stuff. But I think that actually that worked in the film's favour. I quite appreciated not having some ropey transformation scene just for the fun of it. I quite liked not seeing it, basically. Mm-hmm. I think it just worked really well.
It's because I think they knew they couldn't top an American Werewolf in London transformation.
Yeah, or Teen Wolves, I suppose.
Or Teen Wolves.
You didn't want to really be seen to be aping them either, so if you couldn't match it, do your own thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, don't show the monster. Drip-feed bits, don't show it.
Well, listeners, please enjoy some more delightful music from the film. And then when we get back, we will reveal our favourite moment from the film. So for the last section of the podcast, it's just for us to have a little chat about our favourite moment of the film and then give it its verdict and score to go on the board. So we'll start with Punk first, as he's our guest. I don't know, have we already talked about your favourite moment in the film?
I think we did touch on it. It, of course, it had to be Pertwee when he's looking down at his own intestines and he's just sausages.
Yeah, it's just the delirium setting in. I'd forgotten about that.
Well, it's just the throwaway lines are what do it for me. You Cooper fighting werewolf Ryan, and it's a life or death moment. You're toe to toe with a werewolf, and he asked him, "Have you tried licking your own balls yet?"
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I think I'm not normally a fan of quippy comedy, but some of the lines in this were superb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they really wrote the film well, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. So it would be sausages for me.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, I think there'd be something wrong with you if you walked away from that film and said that that particular scene wasn't one of your favourite moments of the film. Because you don't really see it coming either, do you? You know, you're seeing the squad, they're getting attacked. All of a sudden he's on the floor and and he's all disemboweled. And it's just a shock scene as well, isn't it? Because it's just... I don't. Is it one of the first kind of proper gory parts of the film, as well? Is it? I think it is, isn't it? Like you've not really seen much beforehand,
apart from the tree. This would be the first time somebody's hurt and hasn't died.
Yeah.
Instantly. So.
So I guess for the camera to pan around, and then you see Sarge, who has and Sean Pertwee, who. In your head, you've labelled as the lead character.
And you don't think he's going to last another 5 minutes after this?
Well, yeah, exactly. No. You think that he's going to be one of those characters that get through the majority of the film unscathed because it's the lead one of the lead characters is Sean Pertwee. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, he's got hacked by the werewolf and, you know, half his belly is open. And it's a shock to me. Even when I knew it was coming again this time around, it still kind of got me. And I think that's probably half the reason why this scene sticks out so well for a lot of people, not only for the shock of seeing all the intestines out and just hanging about, and then, you know, Cooper's like just ramming them back into him so that, you know, he doesn't lose anything. But also it does on kind that of front as well.
Set the tone that, you know, yeah, the humor going forward.
Yeah, I guess it did, didn't it? But I think it's a great pick. Definitely one of the best parts of the film for those reasons. Is that your favorite scene, Chris?
One of them, but I love the cup of tea scene when it's just such a break of tension, and I didn't see it coming. When you've got all of these squaddies trying to survive, you've got one that's got his intestines being dragged away by the dog, and it just stops for a moment. And I say, anyone want a fucking cup of tea? Let's make a fucking brew. I didn't see it coming. It floored me to a point where I was like, wait, what? And then they literally, like, you're stopping for a tea break. They cleared the table and put chairs out and started the water boiling to make tea for everyone. And it's just so sublimely English that it was that welcome breathing moment in the film for the audience. And you're just like, what is going on? And we brought it up earlier that one of the guys with the rifle out the window just casually picks his tea up without moving, just standing his post. And it's like muscle memory. Got these guys that are basically nearly dead being cornered in this house. Anyone want a cup of tea? It was just great. It was just so delightfully English that I didn't see coming in a film like this.
Something about those real moments in the middle of werewolf horror too, they just stand out so much more.
Yeah, and it was that moment when I realised that, hang on a minute, this is very Edgar Wright kind of school of thinking. It had that moment where I was like, wait, what? They're having tea? And it was just so delightful to hear and see that whole scene play off. Because even some of the soldiers in the room were like, their faces were like, it can't be fucking serious. I had that reaction. Like, yeah, I just thought it was just delightful that scene exists in a movie like this with werewolves and disemboweled soldiers. I loved it. Like, for the film, for all of its, you know, pomp and splendor, and it's the cup of tea scene. I don't know why.
Did it go through your head at any point when they're going, I wonder what tea they're drinking? Or is it just...
No, I just assumed that naturally English people could go into any house and find out where the tea, sugar and milk is kept.
Sure, it's technically your PG tips. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Or Yorkshire tea.
In Scotland.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, a lovely little moment that I was caught out by. I actually laughed. I was like, what?
Just needed the custard creams to complete the scene, eh?
Yeah, again, if they'd thrown in a comment where one of the soldiers said, we've got any biscuits in the scene, oh, yeah, here you go, Gov. That would have been perfect. Like a tin of all butter shortbread biscuits or something stupid like that.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Or they open a tin of French butter biscuits and it's sewing equipment. I mean, it could be.
See if those as weapons. Yeah. Needle in the eye.
They might strike lucky. They might have some silver-plated needles and then... imagine that, taking out werewolves with silver-plated needles. Again, that's a completely different podcast.
We've created about four podcasts tonight. So yeah. Well done, gentlemen.
You're welcome. I'm in the imagination business.
There you go. Yep. We'll put a small credit at the bottom for you, mate. Don't worry.
Oh, thank you. What about your favourite moment?
We've already kind of covered it, unfortunately. And it had to be when he was fist-fighting the werewolf.
Yeah.
It has to be for me. Because like I said, I didn't see it coming. When I thought it was going to happen, I was still unsure it was going to happen. And then when it did happen, it was just great. Because I think in any other kind of film as well, he would have tried to land one punch and then they would have just killed him.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
He does hold his own for quite a while.
Mm. Yeah. And I loved it for that. I was like, go on, mate. Kick the shit out of him. Go on. Land another one. I was like in with him. I'm like, I'm throwing punches with him and stuff like that. And do you know, like,
just go when on you're swinging.
When you're doing that in a film, you know that they've done something right, that their audience is like that invested in the character.
Yeah.
And you wanting that character to succeed so well. and like you're physically like, oh, go on, punch him with him and such. For that on its own, it has to be my favorite part of the film. And it was really hard to like choose a moment of Dog Soldiers, because there are so many different great scenes in the film. But yeah,
one of those movies you can just quote. It's the radio and then because you got spooked by a flying fucking cow.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, definitely.
I've forgotten about that cow scene, actually. That's fucking brilliant. What the fuck is that fucking cow? What do you think it is? Oh my god! Like what?
But unfortunately, I don't remember what else I can say about the film, about that scene that we haven't already covered. You know, like where he's lugging all the anything he gets his hands on at the werewolf, and yeah, he's just holding his own for so long. And like, there's a moment there is a small moment where I'm thinking, is he going to get away with this? Is he actually gonna? Is he gonna succeed? Yeah, again, I think that's kudos to the acting and to the writing and the way they shot it to make you, the audience, believe that. And just really successful in pulling that off. Yeah, so bravo to them for doing that. Brilliant. Okay then. Well, if there's no other parts of the film that we want to talk about, then we'll just go into our verdicts and get a score for the film to get it onto our board. And we'll, you know, once more, as Punk here is our guest, we'll come to you first. And we'll just offer an overall thoughts of the film and then a score out of 10. Please, dude.
I found it a surprisingly gentle watch, and I don't mean that as an insult. I could happily stick this back on again after the credits rolled.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from the first time around, it was always a DVD that got stolen from house parties. Because somebody had seen it and decided they wanted it for themselves. So I think I would have to go 8.
I was pleasantly surprised. I'd never really seen it before. And like I said, bits were familiar to me. But I'm going to have to give it a 6 cups of tea out of 10.
Just a 6?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I hope that tea gives you the shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was enjoyable. But... werewolf movies aren't really my thing to enjoy. You see plenty of them.
How about when the werewolf reached into the house, grabbed the shotgun and fired a shot back into the house?
Yeah.
Is that just not engineering?
I really enjoyed it, and I was debating a 6 or 7, but maybe go for 6.5, Jason. Let's go meet in the middle. It was enjoyable, but it just... I don't know, just maybe because it's not a nostalgia value for me. Maybe I'm seeing it fresh eyes as an adult. Maybe if I'd had that nostalgia for it, if I'd watched it at house party 20 years ago, maybe it may have scored higher. But just for the gags, it was like a gag every scene almost. And I think that kind of elevated it to like what is going on. Like I was watching it not knowing what this film was going to be. Is it a comedy? I couldn't work it out. And then all of a sudden it became clear halfway through that, oh, I see where they're going with it.
Okay, cool. Well, Dog Soldiers for me is a film that I saw. I remember it getting recommended to me way back 2004-05 time. And I remember just loving the film when I watched it. I thought it was a great film. And then to this point, I never watched it again. So. Maybe I didn't think it was that great back then. I don't know. But I was really glad to rewatch it for this. I don't know. There's just something about watching a British film, isn't there? And they're just pulling it off well. Because we get so many American films. And yes, you know, there's a lot of great American films. But when you get a great British film, there's just something heartwarming about it.
And especially so genuine too.
Yeah. Mm. And especially... in this genre, because I don't think there's many like good British horror films that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm sure there's like really famous ones that people are shouting at me. But so for this to exist, it's just brilliant. And the fact that, you know, Neil Marshall, who directed it, did such a great job of getting these guys together and it being, and I believe he wrote it as well. So him with the script that he came up with as well, the whole idea of it. Like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, it's a bit different to a normal werewolf movie. You don't, You know, you don't follow the person that's going to turn into a werewolf and then you see him transform and they go and kill lots of people. You know, you're kind of seeing it from the other side. And that the designs of the werewolves, like mentioned, just brilliant. Love them. I've never really seen anything like it since, I don't know, all the quips and the plot and the twists and everything else. It's just a great film and everyone should go and see it. Even if you don't like the genre, you know, it's gory. Yes, there are moments, which I'm sure you've picked up on, but it doesn't get overly disgustingly horror-y, gory. So kind of appreciate that as well, because I think, you know, I'm not the biggest horror person. I think I've said that before. You know, I always kind of shrieked away from horror films to a certain point, but I think it's the style of horror that I like. You know, I don't just go into a horror film and expect to just see lots of gore just for the fun of it, you know, and this film definitely does that. You know, it shrieks away from the gore and only kind of shows it to you in certain places. And even when they do, it's not too grotesque. It's, you know, it's just at the perfect level. I'm rambling, so I'm going to shut up. I'm going to give it my score of 8.8 and be done with it. So I believe that, Punk, you gave it an 8, Chris mm-hmm. gave it a 6.5. So that gives it 23.1, which puts it right in the middle of Anaconda and Doom. I feel like this film needs to be higher than that.
Came below Anaconda, not above.
Do you know what we need to do? Is the fact that because Rich and Chris aren't here, when Rich wasn't here, we just gave it a score that we thought Rich would give it. So what we should do is like think, what would Steve and Rich give it? And then just come up with a number. Because I think both of them would probably really like this film. And I think probably both of them would give it, I don't know, a 7. What do you think?
How much do they like dogs?
Rich really likes dogs. I know that.
And there is that scene where they get sick on Ryan's head. I did enjoy that.
Oh, yeah. I'd forgotten that. He just froze up on him. Thanks for that. He's just wiping the chunks.
So, yeah, Rich really likes dogs. I assume Steve likes dogs. I have no idea, to be honest. But that they would give it a 7, I'd say. So let's give it a 7. My calculator's gone wrong again. Hang on. And then a 7. All right, we're at 30.1 for Dog Soldiers, official end score, which doesn't put it in between Doom and Anaconda. It puts it between Lake Placid and Weird Science. I feel that's a much...
That's a fairer...
I feel that's a much happier place for Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, I'll sleep tonight after that one.
Yeah, and we'll all rest easily on that one, so... Yeah, congratulations to Dog Soldiers. You made it on our board at a respectable level. Punk, I mean, we've kept you way longer than what you're used to podcasting, so I'm really sorry.
Oh, don't worry, the bill's in the post. This is ridiculous. Half an hour.
God damn it, I know, and we've kept you for nearly like double the amount of time, so all we can do is apologise, but...
I don't accept.
Oh, tough, mate. It's the best that we can give you. But, you know, during this time, it has been a pleasure to have you here and to finally be able to talk to you. Yeah, and just for the short notice that we gave you.
Oh, no. I mean, thanks for the invite. And it was great to have an excuse to actually watch this movie sober. Stood the test.
So I'm glad we're giving you that. We're giving you that experience, dude. Yeah, really appreciate it.
It's been great having you on and meeting
you.
And it's just been a lovely energy that we've had. And yes, it's been good.
Of course, the customary way to end a podcast with a guest is to ask where people can find you. So if you would like to pimp yourself to the highest, then go for it.
Only one way to do it. I bought a URL when I was really drunk and thought this would be a great way of promoting the show. Ucons.co.uk. You'll find me there.
That's fantastic.
I can't even.
5 years I'm stuck with that.
It's like the email addresses you had when you're at school and college, and you're like, oh my God, I applied for jobs with that email address.
Why wouldn't you want to hire a deadbeat punk? He's fantastic.
Well, we made it, you know, over an hour of this recording without the C word, and Punk managed to squeeze it right in the end there. I can't
I
even
tried
bleep
my best.
It.
I was watching it.
But you asked where they can get hold of him, and he just gave you a web address, and it just happened to be that.
Was it, you what? You what? You coats? You crows?
Yeah.
Well, I think for the first time in the Wolfie Pod's history, the C word will be staying in to the podcast.
Is that the first time we've had the C word?
Well, you dropped a C bomb during the Robocop episode, but
did I?
I think that's, yeah.
Oh, Christopher.
I know, right?
Dirty devil.
Yeah, and then it took me ages to try and figure out how to bleep it, because I've never done it before.
Sign. Tone.
Yeah.
Yeah, just download a soundbite from YouTube and isolate the audio.
And there were some parts of me that I was going, do you know what, just leave it in, Jason. What's the problem? Podcast, that's free speech, isn't it? That's free speech. It's fine, you know, no worries, you know.
Yeah.
It may be a bit rambly, a tale. I was invited on to an American chat show, a radio Twitch job, and I just wanted to test the water before I went on. And I say, I run quite a sweary show. I'm not naive enough to think that you actually listen to the show or you're a fan. So I just want to know what I can and can't say before we organize. And they're like, oh, well, we're a sweary show too. I say, oh, I'm glad to hear that. There's just a couple of words you can't say. So, okay, what are they? I'll know to avoid them. Well, the outdated F term to refer to homosexuals. I was like, well, that's not in my wheelhouse. I don't have to remove that out of the Rolodex. I say, you can't use the N word. And I say, yeah, I gathered you couldn't. And you can't say the C word. I say, oh dear. You really haven't listened to the show, have you?
You just said, I'm Irish.
I use it as a comma.
Yeah, it will just come out with muscle memory. I wouldn't even think about it.
You won't be able to understand it anyway. You're American.
Well, you know, in some ways I'm quite happy. I've got a deadbeat punk C word in the podcast. So, you know, cheers, dude.
Anytime. If you want another one, just let me know.
I know. Yeah, I know you like to put a bit more emphasis on the word in your own podcast. So I guess that's an advertisement for people to go and check it out, just so you can, you know, experience that, you know, that pronunciation.
Yeah, I mean, those horrible mornings where you have to drive the kids to school, little half-hour show just to spice things up.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I have to turn you off when Mike is getting the car. So.
Yes, the children, they've been saying hooer and prick a lot in a very strange accent.
Yeah.
Is everything okay at home?
Yeah, little Tommy's swearing in Irish.
Well, thank you to you, the listener, as always, for sticking around for our rambling. Really, really do appreciate it. But before you leave us, I'd just like to remind you of a few things. We'd really appreciate it if you check out our Ko-fi page, where you can go and show your support to us monetarily with a one-off or monthly donation. But I know times are tough. We're still in the crunch, I guess. So if that's not cool for you right now, then a rating or review on your podcasting platform of choice would be amazing.
Tell your friends, it does help.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Please take a look at our Discord server to chat with us, including Deadbeat Punk and other like-minded people on retro or modern day pop culture. Yeah, I'd really like to see you in there and have a chat with us. Just trying to build up a little community would be really cool. So yeah, if you're bored and you want to come and chat some stuff like that, then we're there waiting for you. And you can find links to that in our show descriptions or on our website. And while you're there, please check it out. We've got a whole back catalogue of episodes and much more at thewolfiepod.com. But guys, it's that time once more to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sausages.
My name has been Jason, and you've been listening to What's Wrong with Wolfie, a retro podcast to the max. We'll catch you on the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Barking.